You're with Julian on the Brown Note, and continuing the retro reviews, a review of Jackie Brown, the third Quentin Tarantino movie that came out in 1997 and was regarded as a misstep at the time, and after that has become one of those films where the fan base regards it as his best film. Not really, but sort of. It was given lesser reviews than the double whammy of Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction that preceded it, and it kind of was a breakwater as it was a more subdued film, and it showed one of the most evolving directors. Like, I get so annoyed at the way that Quentin Tarantino has been underappreciated. People like Christopher Nolan and David Fincher and Paul Thomas Anderson, all these people get much more serious critical opinion than a writer that is better than all of them, for a start. And this whole notion of bro-tasticness that follows Tarantino around, he's the one that writes the best female characters out of all of them. Christopher Nolan still didn't for Oppenheimer. He still can't write female characters, and David Fincher needs them to come from a book or something to have a decent one. Many of these really struggled to get. Quentin Tarantino started this run with Jackie Brown of having a female lead, not only a female lead, but a middle-aged African-American woman as the lead character in his film, followed by, I think, Kill Bill 1 and 2, where virtually the entire cast were female. And I would allege that Inglourious Basterds also had a female lead, or at least the most approximate. So there's four films where females were dominant. And he gets just zero credit for he just gets called, you know, a bro film. But he's also developed the most out of any of those, I think, artistically over the time. And I saw Jackie Brown recently again for God knows how many times, and really did appreciate it because it's been a lot of years. From the Elmore Leonard novel Rum Punch, and he's changed a few elements, but Elmore Leonard, I think, turned around and said that his favourite of the, I think it's 26 different adaptions of his novels. And it's easy to see why. Apparently, apart from changing the lead character and a couple of other elements, it does actually follow the book. So there are a number of interesting things in here. Like, Quentin Tarantino is called Brotastic. He never shows female nudity in his films, and he's never had sex scenes in his films. He's never had girls in his films solely as the love interest of another character. Like, how does he not get credit for this? So this is the only Quentin Tarantino film, I think, that has a sex scene in it, and it's a very short one, and it doesn't contain any nudity. Which is unusual, but it's also the only one that is actually from source material. So somebody else wrote the original material. So he's very unusual in that regard as well. David Fincher needs a good writer. Otherwise, he ends up with sometimes very substandard product. But benefits when he's got a really, really good, like, Fight Club, like Gone Girl. He benefits from having a really good writer to base his material from. This one stars Pam Grier, who was a hero from the exploitation era. One really interesting element of this film is it was very controversial on release, and Quentin Tarantino got a lot of abuse from people for making a black exploitation film with the N-word in it and trying to, you know, be a cool white guy by doing so. None of that's true when you watch it back now. For a start, the N-word is in a lot of films that are by white directors significantly more than they are in Jackie Brown. And most of the characters in Jackie Brown aren't using it. And the other major element is it's not a blaxploitation film at all. It is not even remotely close to being a blaxploitation film. It's a crime drama. The one element that stands out as blaxploitation is a superb soundtrack. Unusually, I guess Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino are the dual kings of the jukebox film, in that they are synonymous with these incredible soundtracks of 20 or 30 tracks in their films. Normally, Tarantino's are very wide-ranging. I think this one really benefits by its very narrow band. It focuses on particularly sort of 70s soul. And another major element is the main relationship in this is a platonic love affair between two middle-aged people from across the racial divide, Robert Forster and Pam Grier, which is, again, you know, a very interesting concept to hang a whole movie on. So we get Pam Grier is an aging air steward on a terrible route from Cabo San Lucas, not as famous at the time as it is now, and to the United States because her ex-husband was jailed for drugs and she was struck off for, I think she got a small sentence for drugs and therefore couldn't work for any of the major airlines. So what she does is she brings money in for Robbie, who is played by Samuel L. Jackson. And they're the two leads, not Robert Forster and Pam Grier, but Pam Grier and Samuel Jackson. Samuel Jackson is a local gangster who is both terrifying and also a little bit incompetent at times. And he's in Selling Guns. And we see at the start, is it Chris Rock? I think it's Chris Rock or someone like that at the start. Gets out of jail and is facing a long sentence and has worked for Ordell. Ordell, the Samuel Jackson character, goes to Robert Forster, who is a bail bondsman, to bail this guy out of jail just so he can whack him. Because he knows that this guy is going to turn on him and become state's evidence and the whole game's up. So he pays the 10 grand to Robert Forster, gets him out of jail, kills him. Then we get Pam Grier come in and she's picked up from her Cabo San Lucas to America route with a bag full of money by Michael Keaton as ATF agent Ray Nicolette, which is interesting because he plays the same character in the superb Out of Sight, another adaptation of the same author's work. Exactly the same character. Him and his colleague try and pressure Pam Grier into giving up Ordell, and Pam Grier and Robert Forster eventually hatch this plan to rob Ordell of his $500,000 in a very elaborate rouse by her bringing it into the country and managing to con both Ordell and the police at the same time and walk away scot-free. Honestly, it is better than I remembered, which was very good. It still occasionally has a little bit of flatness here and there, and some of the side characters, like the performances across the board in this, are really strong, and the characters are really strong. So you get a very out of character performance by Robert De Niro as this really dumb criminal friend of Ordell, who's just got out of prison, called Louis Gara. And also, probably a career-defining performance from Bridget Fonda as the surfy chick that lives in one of Ordell's pads as his de facto girlfriend, but really someone that he can just sort of use when he needs them to do things. And he's got these women around the city in different locations in flats that he owns. And he puts up the Robert De Niro character and the Bridget Fonda character, who knew each other from the past. Some of their interactions don't really need to be in the film as much, but they both give great performances. And there's a very iconic scene where Bridget Fonda just starts taunting Robert De Niro in a car park, which is still quite a famous scene. I thought it was fantastic. I thought that, you know, seeing this guy go from Reservoir Dogs to Pulp Fiction and then come up with something that was so soulful, where the central plank of the film is these aging characters, Pam Grier and Robert Forster, bonding over the passing of time and lost opportunities and their lives and their fact that they really like each other and listening to the Delphonics, was a big turn away from the scene-on-scene, dialogue-heavy, you know, cool dialogue, cool music of Pulp Fiction. And it looked to be that, you know, that was what Quentin Tarantino was capable of, but here you get this multifaceted, multi-layered film with actually a really good elaborate con going on in the background. Samuel Jackson's excellent here. He's fallen a bit into playing Samuel Jackson, actually a lot into playing Samuel Jackson in the modern era, but around the time of Pulp Fiction and Jackie Brown, he really was turning in some great performances, and he's a great character here as well, who alternates between extremely funny and extremely menacing. Robert Forster is the only one that got nominated for an Oscar, which is criminal, and he's a career-defining performance for him, and it reinvigorated his career, and it reinvigorated Pam Grier's career, who is fantastic in the lead. She is another multi-layered character, capable of being incredibly sexy and incredibly haggard when she's in the prison sequence at the start, and also changing from being this very classy woman into this really street woman as well when she's dealing with Ordell and not backing down to him or letting him bully her. And it's a great story. It's a long film. It's about two hours and nearly two and a half, I think, long. How long is it? Yep, nearly two and a half. Oh, two hours, 30 minutes long, which is still pretty. Yeah, I said two and a half. What am I talking about? Which is not a short film. And it is a more low-key film, but it does benefit, I think, from that in the face of what preceded it. So I thought, the performances of everyone was really good. De Niro was fantastic in this film because he's unlike anything. I've never seen him play such a ditzy, broken down man. But he does a great job. And this, the scene on scene between people like Ordell and Pam Grier and Robert Forster and Pam Grier and Bridget Fonda and Robert De Niro, they're great stuff. I think the Keaton character in the FBI side of it is a little underdone. I don't think it's particularly interesting, but it's a very well set up con. It's got some great moments and a terrific film. A 9 out of 10 for me. I think I'd probably go Pulp Fiction, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Reservoir Dogs, Jackie Brown, Kill Bill 2, I think would be my five best Tarantino films. This is